Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your host for this weekend edition. Also your host on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. As much as the markets just move sideways throughout this week and pretty much throughout this month, we're busy with a lot of analyst coverage, a lot of forward-looking comments in terms of this whole narrative. Not just that the Fed is going to be pausing, but when the Fed is going to start cutting rates and what's already priced into this market, as well as a number of company interviews. So please go back through our website and podcast and listen to the editorials from this week. On this weekend show, we're going to start off with more of a big picture look at the economy and also some of the currencies around the world. And then in the second half of the show, we're bringing on a technical trader to look at the setup in precious metals. So to kick off the show with more big picture look, we are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Now, Mark, let's start off with just a quick recap of earnings, because this week was a big week for big tech earnings, and we all know how big tech can carry these markets. Really, when we go back through all the earnings that we've seen so far with lowered expectations, there have been a lot of beats and some companies doing well on the back of those beats. But again, overall, markets broadly are range bound, and big tech, well, they had some good earnings, again, off lowered expectations. Mark, what's your recap so far of earnings season so far in the U.S. for Q1?
Yeah, what it strikes me is that corporate profits are lower than they were before. Earnings look like they're going to decline again for the second consecutive quarter. But I think this is obscuring what I think is relatively good news. You know, as the month winds down here, the NASDAQ, which is the tech, which is really what captures a lot of people's attention with those earnings, it's up about 4.1% for the month. That is the weakest out of the three major indices. The S&P 500 up almost, say, call it 4.9%, and the Dow up a bit better than 5.1%. So, yeah, I think that the tech story is there with the earnings. That captures a lot of attention. But overall, this has been a good month for U.S. stocks, but really global stocks, especially U.S. and Europe. Asia and their China has really underperformed despite their GDP being stronger than expected. Their CSI 300 is lower for the month. But the major indices have rallied this month, and I think it's come on the back of lower interest rates and these expectations you were talking about rather than the earnings themselves.
Well, Mark, to that point, you know, if you look at the market breadth, a lot of the earnings weren't as good as the big tech leadership and some of the mega cap stocks, which are holding up these indexes. Does that speak to maybe more weakness under the surface than we're seeing in the news headlines on financial media? And are you thinking that there's still some concerns about whether the Fed is actually going to pause or if they're actually going to continue hiking?
Well, yeah, so I do think that the financial and policy backdrop is an important, I'd say right now it's a negative for the market. And that's because there's two of them, I think. One is the debt ceiling. And the other is, as you say, the market's still thinking the Fed's going to raise rates next week. First week in May, and that'll be 25 basis points up to 5.25%. And here's what I think is ironic, I think, a bit, is that part of the reason why I suggest the stock market's rallied is because the market is pricing in 3 Fed rate cuts between, after the May meeting. After the May meeting, there's 5 FOMC meetings in the year. The market's pricing in what seems to me to be 3 cuts in the last 5 meetings. And that's already priced in. And so what strikes me is that it seems like just a stretch. I haven't talked to anybody who really believes that. And so I wonder if what's going to happen is that market view sentiment converges with the Fed rather than the other way around. And if that's the case, higher U.S. interest rates, you would think, as the pendulum swings back, higher U.S. interest rates would weigh on stocks after this month's rally. But the market is still very reluctant to take that into account. That is to say, pricing in these three cuts, and despite the pushback from Fed officials, despite the a relatively good GDP, I know when we were talking before, we were talking saying it slowed to 1.1%, and that's true on an annualized basis, and that's partly a function of inventories. And since COVID, businesses have been really struggling managing inventories. And in Q1, inventories shaved 2.9 percentage points off GDP. So if you were to look at what economists call real final sales to domestic purchasers and that, private purchasers, and that excludes, what it really excludes is things that are more noisy in GDP to get a better tune, a better handle on the underlying signal. So you exclude inventories, exclude trade, and you exclude government spending, and you're looking at an economy that grew by almost 3%. And I know you might think that, well, you're excluding all the negatives, but it tends to be the volatile thing. And that was the same thing in the first half of last year. Remember when the economy contracted? It was, again, primarily because of inventory and trade issues rather than the underlying economy. So I think that the takeaway is really that the economy is doing fine, slowing. And we're going to see that next Friday when we get the U.S. jobs data. We're looking at something like around 155,000 private sector jobs. That would be the lowest since December of 2020. So while the economy is slowing, price pressures are also slowing. But the Federal Reserve, I think, is looking in the medium term, and they see a much tougher comparison in the second half of the year, which is really to say what a lot of people, I think we've talked about this before, getting inflation to go from that 8% during a sort of wartime crisis, supply shocks, to something in the 3.5 to 4% area would be a task. But the real challenge is going to be bringing it down from that 3.5, 4% to the 2% target. And that's what I think the Fed's worried about. So if I was to wager on this, I would say that a rate hike after this May meeting is more likely than this 3 rate cuts that the market's got priced in. And that's why I'm a little bit more positive on the US dollar and a little bit more negative stocks.
Yeah, this one thing that's been sticking out to me here, Mark, is that everybody is pricing in these rate cuts, or at least expecting these rate cuts. Everyone is expecting a tough second half of the year for a number of different reasons. And I understand these concerns when you look back at what happened last year, when you look at the yield curve, when you look at the comparisons. But markets are forward looking. So what do you think it would take for markets to adjust their expectations here outside of the Fed saying something? Because the Fed hasn't said that they're going to be cutting three times by the end of the year. We've had the odd comment from a Fed head, but what data point, what would cause investors to say, you know what, maybe we were a bit too aggressive pricing in these rate cuts?
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is that we're going to get the market pendulum to swing back. I think it's going to be that inflation shows itself to be stickier than we anticipated. But that's not going to happen until after we get the June print in middle of July. So it's really going to be late summer phenomenon, I think, that's going to really begin getting that sentiment to swing back.
Well, Mark, we'll have to see how it plays out. At this point, really, nobody knows. There's a lot of forward expectations, but often as the year develops, and even next week, once we hear from Jerome Powell, people may shift their parameters a bit. Let's widen the scope a little bit to the global currency market, though. When you look at the U.S. dollar, it's kind of been range-bound like the markets have. It's been hanging out in that 101, 102 area for a while now, but other currencies have been making new gains. So just walk us through the currency landscape.
Sure. So I'd say there's two buckets to put the currencies in right now. One is the euro and the British pound. They both made new highs for the year this past week, and they are relatively well bid on the idea that their central banks are going to be raising rates more than the Federal Reserve. And this is true, next week the ECB meets, the day after the Federal Reserve meeting concludes. The hawks there have been talking about 50 basis points, but it seems more reasonable to expect 25 basis points, but also probably another 25 to 50 basis points in the next several months. Their inflation is proving a bit stickier. The economy is a bit weaker than in the U.S., but the underlying, the idea basically would be that they're going to be raising rates more aggressively, and that is narrowing the interest rate differentials. The Eurozone reported GDP and it barely expanded in Q1, 0.1% quarter over quarter. That'd be about half the pace, less than half the pace in the US. But I'd say that the market is what bothers me about the euro. We did make new highs, almost at 111, back in the middle of March as the financial stress hit. The euro got down to about 105. So we've had a pretty strong rally. It looks to me like it's stretched. I think that a lot of the good news is in, and speculators in the futures market have among the largest long euro position that they carry, over 160,000, about 160,000 contracts. Sterling just made new highs since last June today. And I think the same story there. The market has fully unwound those rate cut expectations that had filtered in during the financial stress that we saw last month. The market's back thinking that the Bank of England, which doesn't meet till later in May, is going to raise rates to maybe 5%, 5 to 5.25%. And I think that's also helping giving sterling a better tone here. The same kind of story with sterling. I think a lot of the good news is priced in, but we, you know, it's hard to like say the exact high. Next important target area would be about 126.50. And then we get closer to 127.5. But I think that we have to decide as traders whether this is a breakout or whether this is just fraying the move at the end of the month. And given the holidays at the beginning of the month, I think no one's going to jump in until we see full liquidity return, which isn't until really the middle of next week.
This also seems crazy to me, Mark, because the data isn't very good out of Europe. You just broke down what their Q1 data was, lower than in the U.S. Yes, their inflation's higher, but just as we talked about the Fed walking a tightrope here, balancing out when they were hiking by even more the inflation and what the economy is doing, sounds like the ECB is also walking a tightrope where if their economy weakens even more, I don't see how they could go ahead with 50 basis point hikes, which I guess flies in the face of that more bullish outlook for the euro.
Yeah, I think, Corey, it's just because you're a nice guy. I think that, like at the central banks, if the economy contracts, think about what happened last year. The U.S. economy contracted in the first half of the year. It contracted, meeting a lot of people's textbook definitions of a recession. And yet, that's when the Fed began raising interest rates. So I don't think that, I know for like people like us, think about like not only our livelihood, but thinking about our neighbors, the communities in which we live in, the idea of raising rates into a slowing economic period doesn't sound like a very happy thought. But I think this is what the central banks typically will do, because they're willing to take that pain of a short recession. They think have a shorter recession now, squeeze inflation, and then you can have a proper and stronger growth cycle. So I don't think that slow growth alone, even a contracting quarter, and this is kind of interesting when we talk about the ECB. We all know how big Germany is relative to the Eurozone, and yet its inflation is running higher than most of the countries in the Eurozone, and its economy is weaker. And so, I agree in a big picture sense that because I don't think the Fed's going to be cutting three times this year, I can see the ECB hiking rates two more times, maybe even three times. That I do think that the euro is at the upper end of what will be its range for the next couple of months, and that is to say that when we get to 111, 112, 112.5, I think this is, you know, we've already come up a nickel from the middle of March lows. I don't think there's another nickel in it.
Well, Mark, let's also, since we're talking about currencies and we're talking about central banks, let's also talk about the bond market. I've got two questions here, kind of a two-parter for you. One is, in the U.S., rates are still lower than one would expect if the Fed is getting ready to hike again next week. When you look at the two-year, it's around 4%. And you look at the 10-year, it's around 3.45%. You would expect rates to be, the two-year, to be more in alignment with this 5, 5.25, you know, where the Fed is going, especially if they even have the potential, as you mentioned, of hiking again at the next meeting. So I'm surprised by how low U.S. rates are. And then on the flip side, in Europe, you got things like the Italian 10-year up at over 4%. It's actually over our 10-year bond. And they said that actually could create some issues for Italy. Same thing with Spain getting up in the mid-threes, the UK's and the higher threes. So what do you make of the yields that we're seeing and the action in the bond market?
Yeah, so I have like to decouple that a little bit. So I do think that the U.S., so we look at the short end, U.S. two-year yield, right? It's been really struggling to hold above 4%. And I think this is just partly the reason we're struggling is because I think that this idea that the Fed's going to cut, I mean, if you think about what the market is really pricing in for, like, even if you look at like the Fed funds future strip and think about where we could be in a year's time, we're looking at something below 4%. The market really thinks that we're at some kind of major inflection point, and they're waiting for the other shoe to drop, like a 2008 Lehman type thing. And for me, if it's going to come, it's going to be a bolt out of the blue. It's not going to be anything that I could even like guess is going to be happening. Many of us didn't expect when Lehman went under to those kind of ramifications that we saw. I think many people were surprised. I mean, think about what happened between Bear Stearns being taken over by J.P. Morgan in 2008 until Lehman goes under. The ECB hiked interest rates. That's how confident they were that things would be contained. And so you can understand why many people feel a bit burnt and why they might be expecting this other shoe to drop. But I think that's the key problem at the short end of the curve. But to me, one of the key things, and this gets us back in the FX a little bit. So what does the interest rates are one dimension of the price of money, and so is foreign exchange. And if they're connected, even if they're not connected in a very tight way or very very intuitive way all the time. But the 2-year U.S. premium over Germany peaked last August around 280 basis points. This week we made a new low around 115 basis points. This is the U.S. premium getting reduced as people price in the Fed cut and price in continued ECB hikes. To me, the long end of the curve, the way I kind of think about the 10-year and whatnot is a longer term than that, is really more tied to the business cycle and growth. And to me, the fact that yields are down is partly a function of people getting more pessimistic on the economic outlook. As the Fed and other central banks raise interest rates, people get more and more concerned that they're going to break something and they're going to break the economy. And I think to me, one of the important developments has been, we see this in today's data, and that is that the periphery of Europe is growing faster. So the periphery, by that we mean like Italy, Spain, Portugal, Greece, they are growing faster than the core, like Germany and France. And not only are they growing faster, but the inflation is actually lower. So I like the idea, if you're looking for like a bond market to buy, thinking that yields are near a peak of some kind, I think that the periphery of Europe looks very, very, very attractive. Like you mentioned, Italy above 4%. Italy is 3 basis points above Greece. And Greece was, their outlook was just upgraded from S&P. But Greece is one of the fastest growing economies in the Eurozone. So interesting to me, and the thing about bonds is is what's going on in the periphery of Europe. Maybe an interesting investment opportunity to lock in some of those yields from part of the world that you have to take risk for, the periphery of Europe. Unless you think they're going to drop out of the Eurozone, which doesn't seem very likely anytime soon, I think that those bonds in the periphery look very interesting, looking for at a fixed income space. For the U.S., we're stuck. I mean, I think that people have mentioned, you know, one of the issues we were talking about before is the de-dollarization. People are concerned that central banks have stopped growing their reserves in general, stopped buying treasuries in particular. And yet the private sector is filling in that gap. And we can see that in the U.S. auctions, where the indirect bidders, there would be typically foreign entities, foreign asset managers, foreign central banks, they have become the biggest bidders in this part of the, in this bucket of participating in Fed auctions. And even though, you know, people are concerned, I think that we were talking about the debt ceiling, that's looming, but and people are talking about the spread between the 1-month bill in the U.S., which is about a little bit better than 4%, and the 3-month bill, which is a little bit more than 5%. That gap, 100 basis points, is, I mean, it might have been a little bit wider this week, but it's really unprecedented levels, at least in a generation. And I think that too is part of the debt ceiling story. But what's lost in that by looking at that spread is that we every week the U.S. has this 3-month bill auction, and the 3-month bill auction had a higher bid to cover than average, which means that there's more people who want to buy it, despite the worries about the debt ceiling and whatnot. So yes, the debt ceiling is looming. It's causing a disruption to the money market curve, and it's also perhaps weighing on the U.S. dollar, despite despite some relatively better economic news. But I think my guess is that the debt ceiling is going to be resolved, because if it doesn't, we're going to have much bigger problems than a couple basis points in the yield.
So big picture here, Mark, this may seem a little crazy, but one thing I'm taking away from the way investors are positioning, and while it's not as clear cut as I'm going to lay it out here, are investors a little too complacent right now? We're seeing the VIX at lows that we haven't seen in over a year and a half. We have seen some of the safe assets like gold run higher, even Bitcoin's been running higher. But so have markets too. And again, everything that I'm hearing from you, whether it's currency front US or over in Europe and everything else, seems like investors are getting a little complacent, even as we continue to see some issues in the banking sector in the US. Is that wrong to say that investors are too complacent right now?
Yeah, I don't know about complacent, but I would say that the pendulum of market sentiment, it tends to overshoot in both directions. And I do think that, you know, kind of as you remember back in late September, British pound was coming under a lot of pressure. They had a government that wanted to have fiscal stimulus by borrowing to do it. The capital markets went on strike, and British pound fell to record lows. At the time, it was around $1.03. Today, we're approaching 126. But anyways, the point was that back in late September, people were talking about the UK as a third world country. There was the Economist magazine article that talked about Britally, sort of insulting the UK by trying to compare it to Italy like that. And to me, at the time, even, I thought that was just an extreme expression of sentiment. It means it basically showed how far that pendulum of market sentiment had swung, and it swung too far. And that's what I'm sensing now, is the market, that sentiment has swung so far. The market thinks it's a done deal that the Fed's going to cut rates by 75 basis points. That's regarded as baked in the cake. It's fully discounted. And so, yeah, I think that the pendulum of market sentiment has swung too far. And I think it's going to hurt when it swings back. And I think that these are some of the tell signs. This is what I think we were talking about before. All these reports out about how the dollar is going to be replaced. To me, that's like the tip of the iceberg of this extreme reading of sentiment right now. Whatever happens in the U.S. is bad. Whatever happens in Europe or the rest of the world and China is good. And the dollar is going to be replaced. America's in decline. And I hear this it's not just Chinese propaganda. I think many Americans believe it. And I think it's like sort of feeding on itself. But I think this is just an expression like Britally, or that the UK is a third world country, as an example of sentiment can swing too far.
Well, Mark, just to that point about the de-dollarization theme, I mean, we see it a lot. You're right, not just from China, but just all over the media. I see it in European media. I see it in US media. I see it in Canadian media, where people are talking about countries like China and India starting to do trade in their own currencies. Or you see things like Saudi Arabia deciding to stop using dollars and trade with certain countries in their own native currencies. You've seen the same thing recently with Argentina deciding to trade with China in currencies outside the dollar. But we're also seeing a lot of new trade alliances set up, and where countries are starting new trading pacts. And it's kind of not just de-dollarization, but de-globalization. We're seeing a lot of things where, instead of the global, just-in-time supply chains, over the last couple of years, things have shifted to kind of regional trading areas and regional trade blocks. What do you make of this overall theme? How much of it is noise? How much of it is reality?
Yeah, so I'm old enough to remember that back in the late 80s, what people are saying, a lot of the arguments people are using now about China, they used about Japan. Japan was eating our lunch. In fact, I was coming out of graduate school in the mid 80s, and I remember all these management books we had to read about how learning from Japanese management styles. About 10 years or so into my career, it was going to be the euro that was going to take over the world. It was going to replace the dollar. And then I remember reading, must have been like mid, sort of maybe it was around the time, shortly after the great financial crisis. So maybe we're talking about early 2010, 2012, that kind of area. But I remember reading some reports, people began talking about the need for like other types of currencies. And so diversification of the Aussie or Canada. And then it was going to be, I remember reading an analyst suggesting from a large U.S. money center bank that central banks should put crypto, and at the time it was only Bitcoin, into into reserves. And now people think it's China. So I think partly this reflects sort of the we also, I think many countries, many companies sort of like chafe under the yoke of the dollar. There's no alternative for many of them. And you know, it's sort of like what Lula did. He goes to China and he says, who made the dollar the key currency? And I would say he should ask his own companies. He should ask the commodity companies that export iron ore or soybeans. They charge dollars. The Brazilian Treasury issues dollar bonds. They don't issue RMB bonds. He should ask them why. And so I kind of my sense is that there's a lot of noise behind this, but I think you're right. There is two cores for me, two like a kernel of truths. One is that because of technological advances, payment systems, the barriers to have a payment system have gone down. So different countries can have their own payment system. So China's famous payment system is called CIPS, not chips the way we do in the U.S. They call it CIPS. It only takes care of RMB. If the RMB is not part of the trade, you can't do it on their system. Unlike, say, SWIFT, which is any currency. So what you have to do eventually, and maybe this is the direction you were headed, is that a lot of these national systems have to like be sewn together to create an international system. That's a possibility. But central banks tend to move at glacial speeds. And so I don't think this is going to happen today or tomorrow. But that's one development, the payment system, and that's for trade. And the second thing I think is happening is as a result of U.S. sanctions, many countries have been kicked out of the dollar block. Denied access to the U.S. dollar. And this is important because it's sort of like, you know, that movie, The Bad News Bears, the baseball team that had like all the kids that the other teams didn't want. And so in some ways, that's the other thing I sort of see developing is a Bad News Bears China RMB block. For those countries who've been kicked off the dollar block, they didn't quit, they were fired. And that would be Russia, Iran, Venezuela, North Korea. So I could see an RMB block being formed. But I don't think it would include, I'm not crazy about BRICS because I think that India and China, which people, I think when they lump together India and China and BRICS, I think it's politically not very realistic. China and India are rivals. They're geographic rivals. That is to say, they fight, clash, they kill each other on their borders. But they also compete for that regional hegemony. Who's going to have a bigger influence? Things including in the importance of the Indian Ocean and the rise of the Chinese Navy. And so there's a lot of flashpoints there. So I think that in some ways, in the, sort of the stories of empires, what the U.S. could survive and lead a world that's very fragmented. What it doesn't want, I think, is for all the adversaries to gang up. And they're not going. I don't think they're going to. But that's the direction things are looking, like a rise of an RMB block of the Bad News Bears who've been sanctioned out of the dollar block.
All right, Mark, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you very much for your insights. And again, trying to take a bigger picture look, but everybody's looking forward to the second half of this year and a lot of these expectations on rate cuts and even how the markets are positioning at the end of this month. It's just very interesting. And then all these news stories about de-dollarization. There's a lot going on in the news. Very interesting to hear this whole month being such a tight range for almost every market out there. Mark, thank you, as always, for your time. Great having you on the weekend show. We'll chat again next week. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Yeah, thanks for including me, Shannon, Corey. Appreciate it. Good luck to everybody.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.